Welcome to this week's version of the William Hill Racing Sports Show on ESPN 84.5 FM. This is Josh Nagel filling in for Ken Barler, who couldn't be here tonight because he is following the Wolfpack football team. He's in Nashville to watch them take on Vanderbilt tomorrow. He's going to give us some updates. He's going to send in some picks. So we're filling in for him, and hopefully we'll cover all week one NFL for you. Week two of major college football. And we'll start by introducing our panelists here. First, a longtime contributor who we've had over the past couple weeks, who we'd like to see whenever possible when his work schedule allows. Happy to have him tonight. To my left, Mr. Mark Shannon. How are you, Mark?
I'm good, Josh. Thanks for having me out tonight.
Good. And we will, Mark, it's kind of funny. You and I talked about, last night about a couple of the spreads, about the Wolfpack and how, the opinions already seem to vary. And I'm kind of curious, because we've already seen some movement even since we talked, so we'll get into that pretty soon. Our next panelist is used to be a regular on the show, and now we see him only sparingly, Mr. Mark Vespi.
Josh, Mark, what's going on? Oh, I'm just trying to see if our microphones are old.
Yeah, we're having a little bit of technical difficulty here. Hopefully, if we're unclear over the airwaves right now, we'll be cleared up in just a minute. But, Mark, you're all decked out. You got your Wolfpack gear going on.
Yeah, excited for the Pack game tomorrow. It's early, though. Hopefully I'm not at the bar too late tonight. Or I just stay there.
I was going to say, isn't that the easy transition?
That's
right,
kind of the way to do it, yeah.
Open it up in the morning.
You have to be disciplined, Mark. You have to go home, get your sleep, and be ready for tomorrow's game.
Or do it the other way, like we're talking about. That's discipline, too.
All right. And our other panelist tonight is a gentleman who stopped by last week after being a long-time, say, remote contributor. He's here primarily to argue with me about the UFC welterweight championship tomorrow night. It's Jonathan Adamitz. Jonathan, thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me. We're definitely on opposite sides, but we'll see who's right and who's wrong, and we'll put our money where our mouth is.
Well, there is a big UFC card tomorrow night, so that's an interesting fight that's worth breaking down. He and I will do that later, but of course this weekend's primarily about football, the long-awaited first week of the NFL. I'm sure anyone who follows it saw last night's game and playoff rematch between the Super Bowl champion Eagles and the Atlanta Falcons, and there was varying opinions on that one. Mark Shannon, I thought it was interesting in the sense that that's one spread you and I talked about. It was 4.5 when first released several weeks ago. Eagles, playing without Carson Wentz, and suddenly the biggest team you've ever seen came in on the Atlanta Falcons. So much so, not only was a pick 'em, it closed Atlanta 1 in some spots. I told you I felt like I was getting a 6-point teaser for free. I jumped in late on the Eagles, and to me, the coincidence of what I found kind of fascinating watching, it was basically a carbon copy of their playoff game. It was choppy, defensive-oriented. The Eagles made the plays when they needed to, and they got the money. Is that where you ended up jumping in?
Well, yeah, you and I talked, when they were in that weather delay, actually. And it's funny because, the Falcons were, some would say, the better team for a majority of the time. The problem is they were only up 3-0.
Right. As they were in the playoff game most of the time, too.
Absolutely. And so Julio Jones gets them all the way down to the red zone. And then what do? They take out Julio Jones for the next three plays. I mean, I know they had trouble last year scoring in that particular area, but why don't you have your best player on the field when you're trying to get touchdowns?
Right. And it's funny how the game ended on a similar thing. Sort of a futile jump ball attempt to Jones that really stood no chance and ended the game in the Eagles' favor. Mark Vespi, how did you weigh in on that one?
It was crazy just because it was a carbon copy of that playoff game. And what I learned from it is, Sarkisian he struggles calling plays, especially in the red zone, and nothing's changed with any of that. I thought the Falcons just blew it entirely. They got the first play inside Eagles territory down to the 39, 38, something like that. There was like a minute 26 left, two timeouts. How does it take you all the way down to the final gun, really, to get in the end zone? I understand running the clock down so the other team doesn't get the ball, but I mean, I think the worst play was the second one at, the 11-yard line. Every other team, they've got the whole team spread out. Every other team in the NFL hands the ball off there to get the first down, maybe call a timeout. You still got 30-some seconds left. Set up your next three or four plays to get in the end zone. No, they don't do that. Drops back, gets sacked. Then they got a rush. Now, they end up getting the first down, but it costs them probably 25 seconds, and that's where they end up in a bad position. And then couldn't get it to Julio. They got it to Julio two or three times heading there, but when they get crunched in those that red zone area, they can't seem to get it to them for whatever reason.
They wound up playing against both the clock and the opponent, like you're talking about,
Mark. That's
what
I'm saying.
They limited the number of plays that they gave themselves, right?
Exactly.
And anyone that's watching, it's so funny because all of us that watch, we always say we could manage the clock better than a lot of head coaches, offensive coordinators. I know it's much easier for us sitting at home in the couch. But when things like that happened last night, it just drives you nuts. Because, again, they just put themselves in the worst spot that they possibly could. Even at the end of the game when they threw that ball, Josh, he had no chance to come in bounds.
Yeah, and they had an extra chance, too, with obviously, right? They had the illegal contact penalty, one extra chance. And like I said, yeah, reminded me of last year's player, kind of throw it up there and really, you know, didn't matter. The Eagles defended it well, though. But so, Mark, but the question is, did you win a bet or lose?
I did. I actually had the Eagles. I did bet a small play on the over, but I did take the Eagles. I didn't take the Eagles just because everybody else in the world was on Atlanta. I just had the Eagles just because I don't believe in Sark. And I want to see Atlanta, you know, be the Atlanta of 2 years ago before I can back them. And I just figured Eagles at home plus the line going the other way. I just took a shot at it.
Which, by the way, you mentioned that. I think it's been an underrated part of the Falcons' decline, right? Like, they got 10 wins last year after that Super Bowl debacle. It wasn't bad. But people were wondering, oh, what's wrong with them? And you realize the year before, when they went to the Super Bowl, they were setting offensive records. I think it was, you know, ended up being the second most efficient offense in NFL history. It was almost like 34 points a game. That was down to 22 last year, middle of the pack. 22 points a game is borderline, you know, anemic, and it just goes to show, with all the same playmakers, that obviously something went completely awry.
Nobody gets more love in the NFL for no reason than the Falcons do. People love to bet them. They love to believe in them, but they just continue to struggle. Like, when you bet on them, this is how I know, because I've bet on them a few times, and when you bet on them as a bettor and you're trying to get your money and that team's getting penalties and can't get a score in the red zone, and I mean, missing field goals, missing extra points, I mean, come on. That's where you learn that they got an issue there, you know, to get the ball in the end zone. That's a problem.
Yeah. Jonathan, did you have any action last night?
Yeah, I was on Falcons' money line earlier in the week when I still had the dog price. And at halftime, I wasn't feeling great about it. And I didn't look to maybe lay off on the Eagles on a second-half bet. I just let it ride, and it ended up costing me. But I did learn that the Eagles or the Falcons look like they're going to have the same red zone problems that they had last year. And until they fix that, or I see a line where let me take advantage of that, probably just going to let Falcons games go for a while. But, you know, they were the better team for a good part of the game. Nick Foles wasn't really playing all that great. Defense of Atlanta was on the field and looked like it wore down quite a bit, leading to that last Eagles touchdown. I mean, had one play, one shot to win it, and they didn't come through. So,
All right. So that's, you know, opening night of NFL football. Obviously, long awaited. A pretty entertaining matchup, and the entire Week One slate is on deck for Sunday. But let's talk a little bit about Wolfpack football. Mark Shannon, we got a bit of an interesting, you know, matchup here, because you and I talked a little earlier in the week. But it's Nevada facing, you know, at Vanderbilt, and I think matchup wise, you know, it's fascinating because we know Vandy's somewhat, you know, lower-tier SEC club. They've had a little success in recent years. They were down last year, but they made bowls a couple years before. Their coach is Derek Mason, who was a defensive coordinator under David Shaw at Stanford. So you know what that means. He runs that kind of pro-style, you know, physical defense. You know, of course, the issue, as it always is for Vandy's, personnel-wise, they can't match up with the rest of the SEC for the most part. But they've been usually pretty good at non-conference because they tend to have a pretty strong physical team. They win a few games, and then they struggle in SEC play, as, you know, as they did last year. But I think this is an interesting matchup because we all saw, you know, Nevada with the, you know, record 72 points last week against, you know, FCS opponent in Portland State. You know, all kinds of numbers, but that's why I find, you know, that sort of matchup a little bit frustrating, because I have, you know, equated it to, you know, you're on the high school varsity basketball team and you just beat up the JV team and you're celebrating, because what do you really learn about yourself? We'll find out, because I think Vandy's interesting in that they played Middle Tennessee State last week, right? Those schools are 15 minutes apart. Kind of a regional rivalry. They started playing each other a few years back because of the local interest. And Vandy's basically dominated that series. They've won every game pretty convincingly. Did again last week, even though everyone loves Middle Tennessee State in that match. It's funny. Open Vandy -6, closed 2.5, Vandy 35-7, as usual. And they've got a lot of, you know, defenders back. Their quarterback, Shermer, has started the better part of 4 years. He's a senior starter, so like Ganji, someone you're real familiar with the system and what they're trying to do. What I thought was really interesting, if you look at Middle Tennessee State, they're a finesse offense like Nevada. Not quite the run and shoot, but what they do is everything is on the perimeter. Pretty much every play they run is some kind of bubble screen to the outside, and they try to block it up. And it sort of works in Conference USA against, you know, weaker opponents. But every time they play, you know, Vandy sniffs it out, and they go nowhere. And it turns out Brent Stockstill, their quarterback, who's also a four-year starter, 24 of 36 for 178 yards. What's that tell you? 24 completions is about 7 yards a pop, a little bit more. Vandy Fort had 6 sacks and 2 forced turnovers and really never looked back after, you know, pulling ahead early. That got almost 200 rushing yards. No, Nevada had 216 in their game, but again, you got to grade that on a curve. But I'm curious about the line we had a couple weeks back. Ken Bartler, you know, who's not here tonight, but he accurately pegged that it would be right about 10. It was correct. It was about 10.5 opener. Early in the week, there was major steam on the Nevada side, so much so I saw a number a couple of days ago as thin as 8 in some places. Checked it today before the show, and it's back up to 10. So it shows you some Vandy support has come back in. And I just think it's interesting stylistically because, like I said, Vanderbilt has proven they can kind of shut down that sort of finesse, you know, offense. Having said that, Nevada does it a little bit differently. The run and shoot isn't all just bubble screens to the outside. You know, they get down the field. They did have a good balanced running game against Portland State. I do wonder if, you know, what kind of success they can have, you know, consistently moving it against Vanderbilt. But then when you look at Vandy's history, it's like, yeah, do you ever want to lay that many points with them? So to me, the disparity in the line movement, the X's and O's themselves, I find fascinating. Big test for Nevada, of course, SEC opponent, no matter who it is. This is going to show, you know, really how much progress they have or haven't made toward the end of last year. Mark Shannon, where are you leaning on this?
Yeah, so the last point you brought up is what I really want to talk about, and that's what I want. I'm challenged to see how Nevada plays tomorrow. You know, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. As you said earlier in the week, all the money came in on Nevada. I imagine some service released Nevada as one of their top prospects this week, and that's why I got bet down. Having said that, it's gone back up. The total of 61, what do you think that's a Nevada total? I mean, it favors Nevada, that total, doesn't it?
It sounds like it. You're right. But if you look back at Vandy, again, against the weaker competition, you're right, they'll have some, you know, slugfest in the SEC. But against weaker competition, they tend to see scores in the 30s where they can put it up a little bit too. So I'm not surprised.
Yeah, and so my first thought is, of course, the great thing about in-gaming, we can sit back and watch a little bit. I have Nevada plus 11 earlier in the week. I wound up buying it up from 10.5 to 11. So we'll see how that goes. Plus, again, like I said, we have a little bit of in-gaming advantage. The total kind of intrigues me because, again, Mark, I'm thinking that this is more of a Nevada total than it is, you know, Vanderbilt, because I think, as we talked about, Derek Mason, we know what he tries to do most of the time.
Yeah, the highest number I saw was 63, and I think we're landing 61 or 61.5 right now.
Right.
So it's coming down a little, I think, maybe to the Vandy bettors. You see the line going up on the Vandy side and down from the total because I think it definitely is a Nevada total originally. You know, so, I mean, but it's tough. We, like Josh said, we've seen Vandy when they play these other opponents, these lesser opponents, where they put up, you know, 35 to 30 games, lower games than the SEC or lesser opponents. I do find it interesting, like you said earlier about Middle Tennessee, every year, you know, the steam goes on them to start that, and then Vandy ends up blowing them out. I think it's just a weird matchup for them, and their finesse team like Nevada is. We'll see if that style of offense, you know, is consistent with the air raid and see if that is the same kind of deal. But I think the Pack will get their points. I think they can keep it close. You know, I don't love any side of it. I just think it should be a fairly high scoring game and around that number. So, you know, I think the lines are about right in both.
Mark, what do you think though? Another X's and O's question I have is, can Nevada hold up against, you know, Vanderbilt's, you know, front on the offensive side? Vandy's looking to run it. They had a good balance. Like I said, they had almost, you know, 200 rushing yards against Middle Tennessee. They didn't, you know, necessarily need it. And despite the lopsided, you know, result, you know, against Portland State, Nevada still did give up 350 yards of total offense. You know, the FCS team, you know, did something against them. We just saw last year, the last couple of years, you know, physicality on the defensive front has been an issue for them. Do you think they'll get mismatched there?
I just think it's a tough thing to know right now because, you know, you figured the offense would take a step up from last year just having that extra year. But the defense, you know, being as bad as it was last year, it's really hard to say where they're going to fall in that line. As, you know, did those couple players they picked up help their physicality? Is it going to help them with these kind of games? I don't really know. That's why I'm looking forward to this game, just to see what their progress is, mainly on the defensive side. Because I really don't know enough about them. We don't know enough about them, seeing them enough, to know what their defensive prowess is going
to
be.
Right. Jonathan, what do you think the key factor to the game is?
Well, to me, it's going to be how long Nevada can withstand probably the depth along the offensive and defensive lines that an SEC team is going to have over a team like Nevada. I could see Nevada hanging around. I mean, they did the same thing with Northwestern last year, when in Northwestern gave them fits for the first half, and then eventually they wore down to the Big Ten offensive line and defensive lines and couldn't keep up with them. Same thing in this. You know, they'll probably hang around for a while, and Vanderbilt is probably going to pull away in the end. Double digits is probably about right. Total of 61 is probably shaded a little bit higher than what you're going to see Nevada or Vanderbilt games for the rest of the season, because Vegas has given the offense of Nevada some credit.
So, Jonathan, you would have Nevada in the first half if you were going to have them? More than likely?
If I was going to make a play in Nevada, I'd definitely probably look at the first half rather than a full game. And because sometimes you'll get that first half that's shaded to a touchdown, 7 points, but it's 10 for the full game. So if you can get something around a touchdown.
Getting a little extra value there.
Yeah, getting a little extra value first half.
Sure. I'm not up on what the first half line is right now, but you're right. It's usually a little bit higher than the full game. I wouldn't be surprised to see a 6 there right about now. But
it's at 5 on the sheet.
Okay. Here. But again, tomorrow's game, so people are aware. It's 9:10 a.m. start our time, so it is an early one. You want to check out the pack. You want to make sure you're up in time and don't miss any of the action. It's going to be on the SEC Network, so you should be able to check it out on television if you have any sort of cable access. Again, right now as the spread stands, it's fluctuated a little bit, but William Hill is offering Vanderbilt minus 10 with a total of 61. We're going to head off to our first commercial break, but we'll be back with more into Wolfpack talk, more college football matchups in just a minute on ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the William Hill Racing Sports Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Again, Josh Nagel filling in for Ken Barler. This week, as Ken attends the Nevada-Vanderbilt game, as we mentioned in the first segment, joined by Mark Shannon, Mark Vespi, and Jonathan Adamitz. Guys, before the break, we talked about tomorrow's game a little bit. I'm just curious what takeaways, if any, again, we can get from the Wolfpack's week one performance. Obviously, this time winning and in a landslide over your FCS opponents, better than last 2 years' results. We lost, losing last year as a 35-point favorite going into overtime 2 years ago against Cal Poly as a 3-touchdown-plus favorite. This beats those alternatives. Having said that, again, as litmus tests go or whatever, I think leave something to be desired because you can't really tell what's going on. But for what it's worth, Ty Ganji, 16 of 26, 342 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. Obviously, his numbers are pretty eye-opening against that level of competition. One thing I found maybe a little bit concerning, though, for Nevada, 9 penalties for 106 yards, which is more than the opposition. And, again, especially in the first half when it was competitive, they gave up their share on the offensive end to Portland State. And Mark Shannon, it's funny you mentioned during the break, Ken, we know he was talking last week about all the money he put on Nevada, and I thought, man, he had to be sweating it early when you're laying that many points and the opposing team actually goes up. At some point, they were up 9-0, and then you factor in the lane 25, whatever. At some point, he's like minus 35 the rest of the way. You usually don't like your chances in that situation, but it worked out for him.
Yeah, it kind of woke them up, as you say. I'm just going to wait till tomorrow, and then I will start to draw my conclusions. Brought up a good point. The 9 penalties is certainly worrisome. Obviously, they're going to try to clean that up. They say the biggest results you can make is between week number one and week number two as far as getting better, taking care of things. I will wait till after tomorrow and then draw some conclusions.
All right, so we got one more game on deck tonight that's currently in the weather delay. We'll talk about it real quick, but it's TCU against SMU. Of course, we know the Horned Frogs, not surprisingly, a big favorite in this one. It's 22.5 with a total of 59.5. Jonathan, I know you, like me, are a big TCU guy. I'm a big fan of Gary Patterson, but I like it when they're sort of unheralded. When they're a big chalk like this, it's kind of tough. To me, the wild card is SMU, right? Actually, with Chad Morris as their coach, he has since moved on to Arkansas. He had them going pretty good, and surprisingly, they were competitive against TCU under him. They always covered. They almost won a few times. I'd be jumping on the points, but based on last week, SMU just got boat raced by North Texas, didn't look good at all. Having said that, I don't know if I could lay the points. To me, it's a pass, but do you like this one?
Well, I got TCU minus 14 in the first half. Because of the large number like that, there's always a chance you get the back door and SMU ends up covering. But for me, they were down big to North Texas, and they actually scored 23 points in the fourth quarter to make that game respectable. So I played TCU, laid the 2 touchdowns, figuring they'll come out and race ahead, and that way I don't have to worry about them being up by 31 and SMU scoring and then going for 2 and then covering the number at the end. Yeah.
I have the same thing, by the way. We got the bad number because we could have got 13.
Yeah, but it's not the best
number.
But
late. I figure, though, you stayed 2 touchdowns or less, that's a good play. So I bet it for the same reason. The thing about it is SMU is kind of in transition right now, and based on their performance last week, you know, I watched a little bit of that game, and they were like a sieve on defense. I mean, North Texas could have got 60 points, really, or even more than that. So I took a flyer on TCU. Kenny and I talked about it earlier, and he's on TCU as well. So, you know, we bet him, I bet him halftime and the game. The total is one of those weird totals that TCU could get on their own if things go the way the lines are kind of telling you to, but it doesn't mean that it'll happen that way.
Mark Shannon, are you playing this game at all?
No, I am not on it. I looked at it a little bit, and I'm looking right now. So it's got bet all the way up to 24. TCU's all the way up to 24 tonight. But the first half makes sense to me. I like what the guys did, and I'll certainly be rooting for them.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. At 24, I'm ready to jump in on SMU. I mean, that's just a ton of points, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe buy a little hook in there. I mean, that's a pretty good deal. But let's talk about some of tomorrow's games.
You're such a sharp guy, Josh.
Well, Mark, either way you describe it, I mean, you know, it's just one of those things. Out of principle, I will jump in at that key number. When it starts 21, gets to 24, it tells you the whole world on the Friday night chalk. It's time to get a little piece of the underdog.
I totally agree with you.
But tomorrow's games, so we talked about Nevada. You know, they're one of the early underdogs, but there's some others that are catching some attention. The Mississippi State-Kansas State game has got quite a bit of attention in the market as well. I find this one interesting. Kansas State played poorly last week. They beat an FCS team by 3 points. They always seem to do this, though, and I actually think Kansas State's going to be real solid this year. They struggled last year, but they have both of their quarterbacks back, Skylar Thompson and the other kid who runs really well. They split duties last year. They got most of their defense was horrible last year, mostly in the secondary, but they're supposed to be improved. Mississippi State, despite changing coaches, Dan Mullen leaving for Florida, but they're supposed to be loaded. Nick Fitzgerald, the great quarterback, was suspended last week. He's back. But Mark Shannon, this one opened actually 9.5, 10, and we see it last I checked, it was down to a flat 7. People are loving the Wildcats in this spot. They play a similar style, though. I find it interesting. I have a hard time. I'd like to be getting more than 7, but Kansas State's usually real solid in these spots. What they do you on offense, it's kind of funny because Bill Snyder, I mean, their coach is 80 years old, and yet he runs this offense. It just frustrates opponents to no end. I mean, that kind of run-pass option thing where, by the way, Alex Delton's the other quarterback I was thinking of. I mean, where the quarterback just kind of comes up to the line of scrimmage and decides on the fly what he's doing. The defense can't commit. They don't know what to do. Sometimes you run up to stop him, and then, he jumps up at the line of scrimmage and pops a pass 50 yards, down the field to the tight end. Mississippi State does have, pretty good personnel. I mean, to me, it's a tough call. This team's coming in on Kansas State. Where do you lie on this one?
Yeah, so this is not one of the games that I bet. Having said that, I'm always either going to normally take Kansas State or nothing. Love Bill Snyder, okay? Been there forever. You know what you get with him all the time. You get a prepared team. That guy has more energy than a lot of other guys on that sideline. He's amazing.
He got a 5-year deal, like a month ago.
Listen, he's going to probably.
That's crazy. He deserves it, though.
Absolutely. He's donated that time and effort. He's made that school what it is in college football. Good for him. So having said that, I love when a Bill Snyder team's coming off a bad effort, and I'm going to put that in quotation marks for everybody. So last week, Josh, that they didn't play well, I like the fact that now they're coming back, and I'm looking for a much better effort this week. Having said that, I have no action on that game.
Yeah, I totally agree. I got K-State at plus 8.5. I also bet him on a teaser to get him over 14.5.
Yep.
And the Lions keeps going, south. So I think Kansas State is like – they're like Virginia Tech to me. You always have value in betting that team because they do the things, they get turnovers, they block kicks, they do all the other stuff. They have all three phases of the game, as Belichick likes to say. So I like betting them just for the value. I like to bet the coach. And I also think Mississippi State, with Fitzgerald coming back in, I think maybe they take a little tick backwards in the offense because, they had good rhythm under the other quarterback, the bowl game and this first game. I mean, they looked pretty good. I mean, they had a cupcake opponent last week, but, the offenses, they were clicking on all cylinders. I think it'll be a little different. You got Kansas State, with the tough game last week, coming back and, like you said earlier about most teams will make that big adjustment between week one and week two. I think K-State does that this week.
Right. The only thing that worries me a little bit, is that K-State defense. Can they hold up consistently? But I'm with you, Mark, in terms of K-State under Bill Snyder. For years, they drove me nuts. I had a hard time figuring them out. I've more or less adopted a play on them or nothing. Yeah. When it gets to Big 12 play and they're catching 21 points at Oklahoma State, you play on them.
It's,
right.
it's a principle
the time.
Bet.
Yeah,
all
the time.
Totally
a
principle bet. I don't know enough about K-State in the second week of the season to really be fired up about it. But principally, I love it.
And what you said, I'm sorry, Jonathan, I'll go right to you. What you said, Josh, is I want to see them defensively, okay? So they do have some things to prove this year, and I want to see them defensively. And, again, I'll draw some conclusions after tomorrow. Sorry, Jonathan.
Well, I'm actually on the other side of this game. I'm gonna. I'm drinking the SEC Kool-Aid right now.
Why is that?
Well, on top of them playing close last week, they played a real sloppy game. 13 penalties, 4 turnovers. Actually, had to score 2 touchdowns or late just to beat a mid-tier FCS opponent. Mississippi State came out and did what they're supposed to do to a cupcake. Ran through them, ran over them, ran around them with their backup quarterback. I'm a real believer that the new combo, the coach there, Fitzgerald, and Moorhead coming in as a Penn State former offensive coordinator. I think they got something going there. And I'm kind of on the contrarian side. I'll let it slip that they're one of my contest picks this week for that very fact, because I think there's going to be a lot of people sticking to the trend of Kansas State, and I'm looking for a little bit of variance in the contest. And I'm a believer that they're going to cover by double digits.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this much. I like Key State less. The line goes down. You know what I mean? Like I said, if I could grab 9.5, 10, maybe at a flat 7, the value's obviously gone on the underdog. Maybe tease it or something. But let's look at, as the morning games go tomorrow, another one that I think provides some intrigue is the Kevin Sumlin Bowl here. We have Houston minus 4.5 against Arizona. I actually took Arizona plus 4.5 early in the week. Kevin Sumlin, as we know, that's actually where he started. His profile as a coaching prospect coming up through the ranks was enhanced because he did a good job at Houston, then on to Texas A&M, where it's kind of mixed results, which is partly why he's at Arizona now. But they were getting some hype. Arizona actually has probably more returning starters than anyone in the Pac-12, like 9 guys on both sides. They were getting a lot of hype in the preseason. Then last week, as a 10.5-point chalk at home against BYU, they end up losing. Kind of a disappointment. Houston kind of went through the motions against Rice. They were a competitive game at the half, and they pulled away. Here's what I'm thinking, though, and Mark Shannon, tell me what you think. To me, this is one of those immediate value things, because I truly believe if this game were played last week, Arizona's probably, it's either pick 'em or Arizona's minus 1 or 2. I think that performance factored into this line. Him going back there, and Arizona may not be all that great or whatever, but I don't think Houston is either. I got a feeling to come out here. I don't know how Houston actually let Rice rack up. Offensively, that was almost an even game, and Rice is terrible. I don't see Houston stopping Khalil Tate the way BYU did. I think Arizona wins this one.
Yeah, it's an interesting game, as a lot of these are, and for this reason to me. Last week, sometimes things just steamroll, and that's what happened to Arizona last week. I mean, they started off bad. It got worse. They had some awful penalties. BYU came in, and they were really, really prepared. BYU, I like their discipline. I always like what Coach does there. And last week, they really showed up. They had this one marked on their calendar. Arizona under the new system.
BYU was dismal last year, so they had to bounce back, too.
Absolutely. And like I said, it just kind of steamrolled. Everything that could go wrong for Arizona did. They had a decent drive. They turned the ball over. So, again, tomorrow, I certainly see what you're saying, Josh, and getting 4 points here as compared to laying it, like you talked about, we thought we'd probably have to do a week ago. I certainly think there's some value with Arizona. Again, a pretty good team coming off a really bad effort. Give me the dog tomorrow plus the points.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the other side, just because Arizona, to me, the last couple of years, I know they're under a new coaching regime and everything, but it's the same old Arizona. Like last week, just the penalties, the undisciplined, all the little things that make a difference in a game, they don't do any of them well. And I'm not going to believe in them against a team like Houston. Houston is under coaching changes for 2-3 times out of the last 5 years, and I mean – but they're assistant coaches that keep taking over these game, taking over the program or sticking with the program. They've turned Houston into a pretty good program altogether, and I think they're a lot like BYU on the defensive side, physically and more disciplined. I'll take the home team. I don't love minus 4. I bet Houston on a money line parlay already. I'm not going to lay the 4 in this situation, but I do have Houston to win. I think they'll get the win.
Jonathan.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to me to see how Houston handles the favorite role, because typically they perform a lot better when they're the underdog. Now they got a Pac-12 team coming in off a bad loss at home. You can bet that someone's going to really be up for this game. He doesn't want to go back to Houston and lose. I'm on Arizona. We'll see. It's going to be the total is like a little over 70. There's going to be a lot of points in that game. It could be a situation whoever has the ball last wins, but getting more than a field goal, I'll take the points and look for Arizona to get up off the mat.
One other thing about this game is it seems like these defenses have figured out Tate. They don't let him get off running like he did to start, you know, the first half of last season. So they're making him more of a passer, and I don't think he's a good enough passer at this point in his career to – make a difference.
It's true, but does Houston have the personnel to stop him on the
perimeter? I don't know, but I'm betting they do.
Okay.
Well, they got Ed Oliver, who a lot of people think are the number one overall pick, but he's one guy.
Right.
You know, how much he can affect the game.
Let's talk about one more that grabs my attention in the morning just because of the disparity and the spread the programs involved. Oklahoma, last week it was interesting, right, because a lot of people like Florida Atlantic with 21 points, it went down to like 18. Oklahoma just, you know, steamrolls them 63-14, and now UCLA, first game under Chip Kelly, their 15-point chalk against Cincinnati. Actually go up 10-0 in the first quarter like it was nothing. Looks like they're going to roll, and they lose. We talked about the quarterback situation at UCLA with real crowded competition. They started the kid from Michigan, the transfer, Wilton Spate. To me, that made sense. 23-year-old senior, most experienced. The guy was actually 18-4 at Michigan, and they just thought, you know, nothing about letting him go. He gets hurt in the first quarter, but the thing is, the kid who came in, Dorian Robinson, is considered – you know, the top recruit, Chip Kelly, he's the dual-threat type of kid he had at Oregon. So he's considered the best fit long-term of all the quarterbacks that are in their stable. So he got to play most of the game. You know, didn't play great, but got a taste of the Division I competition, and he should be better this week. To me, this is just something that's unheard of. So Oklahoma's minus 30 against UCLA with a total of 64. I'm wondering, does it, you know, feel like, you know, the inclination to just jump in on the points – you know, does it end up being the sucker side? Oklahoma does again, you know, right? Suddenly it's 59-21. You wondered what you were thinking. But here's one thing that's of note, though. UCLA, despite the offensive issues, played really well defensively against Cincinnati. Some of the points they gave up were turnovers on a short field. There's not much you can do about that. And they still didn't give up, you know, much overall. I wonder if they could just get enough stops to get off the field. I also wonder if Robinson comes in there feeling more comfortable. Might be better to be away from his home crowd. This is a real highly recruited guy. Yeah, Chip Kelly, who, as we know, has been at the mountaintop in college football. Like I said, no matter what disadvantages they have personnel wise, there's no way I'm, you know, I'm getting off the points with UCLA in this one. Mark, Shannon?
Yeah, and I was looking at the total a little bit. I know you said, Josh, UCLA played pretty well defensively last week, and they did. I think Oklahoma's superior offensively than Cincinnati is. Of course, you still have Chip Kelly, who made the worst decision of week one in college football. He goes for it on fourth down on his own 35. He doesn't get it, and Cincinnati goes in and scores the winning touchdown. So you do always have Chip Kelly, the aggressor. I mean, they're, you know, and if he gets the first down, of course, you're all excited. Tomorrow, that may come into play a little bit here and there. First of all, I would either take the points, but I bet this game over. So I'm going to hope that defensively they're not quite as good. I think Oklahoma's a little bit better offensively, and I'm hoping that your quarterback that you're talking about, Josh, I think he's going to be better tomorrow out on the road. I agree with that.
All right, Mark Vespi.
Yeah, I mean, you just when you look at this initially, you're like, wow, UCLA plus 30.5, you know, and I had Florida Atlantic last week. You know, I was listening to a lot of the pundits talk about the game and a lot of the trends, you know, the Lane Kiffin trends, getting that many points and things like that. And so I kind of believed in it. When I first saw the game, I was like, you know, Oklahoma should crush them. But then I kind of swayed as I listened to some other opinions, and I was on Florida Atlantic. And, I mean, it was just over from the get-go. And everything came easy for Oklahoma last week. Well, I don't see it just coming quite so easy this week. I'll take the 30.5. I don't love it, but I'm not going to lay that many points. I think that UCLA will have a better effort this week. Right. Oklahoma will have a little tick down. But I do like the total over as well, Mark. I already bet that.
Think about one of these things again. Where to me, it's so many points that UCLA, you know, could get sufficiently boat raced and still cover, right? At 52-24, it's not a competitive game. But it wins when you get 30, you know, points. But, Jonathan, tell us you're on the Sooners, please, to even things out. Like you're on the Mississippi State side.
No, I'm a – not really looking at making a play on this game, but if I was, I'd probably look at it from the total angle as well. Oklahoma practically covered the total by themselves last week, and they could probably do the same this week, and maybe UCLA adds some to it. But ask those people who had Oregon State at 40 last week and had them score 31 points and still not cover.
Right.
Yeah. You know, this game could very much end up like that, you know. So for me, there's other games on the board I'd rather play, but if I was going to bet it, I'd look at the total, probably over.
All right. We're going to head off to our next commercial break here. We'll be back in a few minutes with more of tomorrow's college football slate on the William Hill Sports Radio Show, ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the William Hill Sports Radio Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. Josh Nagel filling in for Ken Barler, who's at the Nevada Vanderbilt game along with John Stevens, one of our other usual panelists. Hope they have a good time. I'm sure they'll be texting us whatever pictures from the venue, and I'm sure they made their bets, you know, before they left. Speaking of which, let's talk a little bit about the William Hill contest that you need to jump in for. We're down to the last minute here, close to the wire if you want to get in on the mini contest they have. The one college pick'em contest, I know Jonathan and I are both in. I love it. It's a bit of a higher stakes deal, but $500, 10 weeks, 7 picks against the spread off a 25-game parlay card. Pick whatever 7 you want. It's basically your person with the best spread record wins. First place is half the money. Yeah, and it pays second and third as well. And it's a fun thing to get you in action the whole week. I know some people, you know, might be a little bit, you know, put off by the high buy-in or whatnot, but I tell friends of mine and stuff, they say, oh, why would you do that? I said, look at it this way. You know, it's 10 weeks worth of action, basically $50 a week, except you're just paying up front. But imagine if it was 50, it wouldn't seem so bad.
Find a partner.
Yeah, exactly. Or you can find backers, go in there, do it, you know, split it up, that kind of thing. But it's a great contest. The cards for that are already out, but you got to realize if you haven't signed up yet and you want to get the action, you pretty much have to do it tonight because entries for the very first week of it are due tomorrow for the games kickoff. So you pretty much you'll need to jump in and get down to your William Hill Sportsbook tonight to get that one. It's worth noting this particular contest and the others aren't available on the app. So it's not like even if you had enough for the buy-in on your app, you can't sign up. You can't do the picks. The picks must be done on a kiosk at a brick-and-mortar William Hill Sportsbook. The other contests, of course, are Pro Pick'em, which is $25 a pop, or buy four, get one free, where you pick all the NFL games with no spread involved, just straight-up winners. We know that, you know, there's weekly prizes and season-long for the best record, $10,000 to the best weekly. You can get those, but keep in mind you can't wait. Tomorrow's your last day for that as well, because William Hill on Sunday morning will not be taking them in the interest of not holding up the lines with all the customers who are there to place their week one NFL bets. They don't want to, you know, have you sitting out there for 20 minutes filling out the form. So tomorrow's your last day to get in on the Pro Pick'em contest for a season's worth of action. Other contests that are worth mentioning is the Progressive Jackpot, which is basically a parlay card similar to the contest in which you pick all the games straight up with no spread involved for a $5 wager, and it grows until someone runs the board and hits all of them, and that's currently at $66,870. So right off the bat, I mean, a huge jackpot to be had. You know, you play four or five cards, and we usually see this thing re-hit, you know, three or four times a year. Once it does, it starts back down at $10,000. And there's also, similarly, a $10,000 college progressive card. Same deal. Pick up all the games, you know, sweep the board, and you win the jackpot. So those are all the William Hill contest. And if you're interested in any of them, you need to jump in right now. The weekly ones are fine. You can play those, of course, restarting on a weekly basis. But if you want Pro Pick'em or the big, the high-stakes college pick'em contest, now is your last call for that. As always, too, we'll give a shout-out to the William Hill mobile app, williamhill.us. If you don't already have an account, it's absolutely essential for the football season because due to the in-game, not only avoid the lines, place all your parlays and straight bets at home, but in-game, as we've talked about many times on the show, adds a whole new dimension to the options you have. Or, yeah, maybe you're unsure about the game. You know, you watch the first half or the first quarter, you get a feel, you get a better number. I know there are times, you know, we're just basically manipulating and or really, you know, paying attention to the end game throughout the days where you can place the, you know, majority of your action, get the best line. So we talked about, you know, the early games of college football for tomorrow. Guys, let's go over a few of the real high-profile matchups for, you know, what's essentially considered week two, week three officially of all the games of week two. With everyone in action, the big games are going to draw a lot of public attention. Tomorrow you got Clemson, second-ranked, going down to Texas A&M. They opened up 12.5. Last I looked, 11.5, which means some money is coming in there on the Aggies. Texas A&M's under Jimbo Fisher for the first time after Sumlin moved on to Arizona. They're typically pretty good in these spots. Last year they were like catching 27 at home against Alabama, kept it a one-touchdown game. That was actually the debut of Kellen Mond, who's now the quarterback. He did pretty well in that one. Clemson, as we know, has basically an NFL-caliber defensive line. Pretty much all their guys would have been high draft picks. For some reason, they all chose to come back to school. You don't see that all that often, so they're incredibly difficult to get anything on. I did a write-up for this one on Sportsline. Mark Shannon, I basically took Clemson for no other reason than, you know, I see A&M struggling. You really can't get anything on them. College Station has just this insane environment. I'm sure they'll play well. But if you can't do much offensively, I just see it being one of those things. Clemson wears them down, and maybe it's tight for a while and ultimately ends up. I mean, still, that's a ton of points. I mean, it could be 21 to 10 or whatnot. But, without getting two touchdowns, I couldn't bite on the underdog. But who do you like in this one?
Yeah, and I'm looking again at the total. I always like, I'm more of a total player than a side player. I'm looking at under in the first half here. I would certainly lean
toward... I didn't know that, by the way. You prefer totals?
I do.
All right.
Yeah, I do, I do. Again, there's variance in all these things, of course, with the interception and a fumble and a run back. But I do prefer the totals. So I'm looking at under, hopefully, that Texas A&M won't do anything silly, turn the ball over, give it to a great spot to Clemson. Having said that, if you made me pick a side, I would take the points tomorrow. I would take Texas A&M. I just think they're going to be, you know, again, Jimbo Fisher, it's his first year there. I get that, but I think they're going to be much improved under him.
Mark Vespy.
Yeah, and, you know, couple that with the factor, you know, he knows Clemson pretty well, you know, facing against him over the last few years. I think A&M is the side. I just don't see Clemson, like, running away from him. I mean, Clemson has the ability to shut you down defensively, and that is one scenario where I could see Clemson, you know, kind of winning this game, I don't know, 34-14 or something like that, where they would get the cover. So I don't love it, but if I were to bet, I have already bet him on a teaser. A&M, I took the
Which,
teaser.
By the way, Mark, have you seen Trevor Lawrence, who's kind of Clemson's equivalent of Tua Tagovailoa? He's the five-star frosh coming in there. He's probably going to be starting in no time.
Yeah, he looks
Gives
like
him more firepower.
Looks like Thor, you know.
Pretty much.
I mean, that guy is he's impressive. I mean, and you'll get a couple series in this game, I'm sure.
Oh, he may play the bulk of the way.
He might, because they really love him. And so we'll see how that, you know, transpires. But I took it A&M. Don't love it, but I do have the points.
All right, Jonathan.
Oh, I'm on the other side of that one. I like Clemson.
All right.
If the one thing, if you're going to lay points on the road.
Yes, you and Josh you on need, Clemson.
You need a
it's
defense.
Good for me.
And
it's
I,
good for us, believe
well,
me.
Boise worked out pretty good for us last week, but I'm on Clemson. I think the defense, and I like you were saying with that hotshot freshman quarterback that Clemson has, he seems to be the real deal. He's going to get playing time, and I'll lay the – and it's actually moving down, so I'm going
right.
to probably wait because it's the –
We could get 10.5.
It's the late primetime game. I'm gonna sit and wait and – Maybe
yeah,
I can.
I think it started at 13.5. Huh?
Yeah, maybe I can buy a point, get it half a point, get it to 10.
Yeah,
and I'll feel really good at that point.
All right, guys, let's get in a couple more before our traffic break here. But a couple high-profile games that grab your attention: Penn State versus Pittsburgh. That's at Heinz Field, of course, not a campus game for Pitt, but they tend to play really well when they're at Heinz Field in these primetime games. Penn State was laying 9.5-10. It's down. Last I checked, it was 7.5. So a lot of money is coming in on the underdog, you know, Panthers here. I would like them usually, except you got to realize Pittsburgh was really poor on defense last year. What I don't like about this one, you know, the Panthers used to be that solid underdog. We know they beat Miami last year when Miami was undefeated. What I really don't like about this one, though, is Penn State's got an axe to grind. They nearly lost to Appalachian State last week and went to overtime. I think that's going to put a little bit of a scare into them. I don't think Pitt, even though your quarterback's, you know, not bad, he got some good work, you know, toward the end of last year. I feel like Penn State comes out a little too much firepower. I actually think I'll play the chalk in this one.
Yeah, I have no play on the game, but I am a James Franklin fan. I like what James Franklin does. Again, you have a good team coming off a lackluster, less than average effort the week before. So I'd look for some improvement tomorrow. But, again, I have no play on this one.
Mark Vespy.
I always play Pittsburgh in these spots. Just principle, that's what I would do again tomorrow. I probably will in some form or fashion. I don't love it, but I'll take the points.
Jonathan.
Yeah, I think this is a little bit of overreaction to the fact that App State took Penn State to overtime last week. Had that not happened and Penn State, you know, won by 2 touchdowns, this was, you know, definitely would have been 13,
right?
You know, or at least double digits. I think you're getting some value on a little bit of overreaction with Penn State.
Now let's talk about real quick the USC Stanford game tomorrow night. Stanford for years had actually had their way with USC and UCLA. Last year, a little tide turn. Stanford got blown out at USC week 2 in the same spot. Met again the Pac-12 title game, real entertaining game. That was USC by 3. So Stanford came up short twice. USC is completely rebuilding. Freshman at quarterback. Stanford looked great last week at San Diego State after struggling early. They blew him out. But KJ Costello was throwing it all over the place. Bryce Love got 29 yards, and they won by 3 touchdowns. This opened at 4.5. It's now 6. It's tough. I actually took the Cardinal at 4.5 as it gets closer to a touchdown. I don't like it as much.
Yeah, I'm looking at Stanford here. I like David Shaw. You know, I think he does a solid job. Of course, we know that USC is replacing the quarterback. They have a freshman out of Modern Day High School.
JT Daniels, right.
Yeah, out of Modern Day High School. And, again, you talked about it. Bryce Love, 29 yards, but Costello, I really – you know, David Shaw's done a tremendous job getting quarterbacks at Stanford, if you go back
right.
to
– And did you see that receiver, Arcega Whiteside, 226 yards, 3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
That's what shows you. I mean, San Diego State stacked that line of scrimmage to throw it deep, and Stanford did it.
Right, and tomorrow, of course, we're going to have both things working. So I'm looking at Stanford here. Again, Stanford's first halves normally, and when they get in these tight games, a lot of them go under, and that's the way that I'm looking at USC and Stanford under tomorrow night in the first half.
Mark Vespi.
Yeah, I could see that happening. I bet Stanford on the money line when they were minus four, and I also took minus four. You know, Costello had a great week last week, but USC has some better corners than, you know, than most people, so I think that could shut them down. But I do have Stanford.
On Jonathan Adamitz.
Yeah, I'm anything under a touchdown on Stanford.
USC, four and a half, you're basically laying six anyway.
Yeah. USC gave up 300 yards rushing to UNLV last week.
Yeah, that's worth noting, by the way. 146 to Lexington Thomas, 71-yard touchdown.
This is going to be one of the games that Love, I think, breaks out and puts some good rushing totals on the board. And traveling on the road, true freshman quarterback. I'm on Stanford, anything less.
I agree, by the way. I don't think USC will be able to stop. You'll see that Stanford power game that they prefer come back to the surface and probably dominate.
Well, plus I got swept by UC last year.
USC.
USC, yeah. But prior to that, they had won seven of the last eight.
Right. You know, they had dominated before that. I think the Cardinal, kind of regains their dominance in this series. Still a lot of points to lay, but that's where I'm leaning as well. So we're going to head off right now to a traffic update and a commercial break, so we'll be right back to the William Hill Sports Radio Show, ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the William Hill Race and Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. Josh Nagel joined by Mark Shannon, Mark Vespi, and Jonathan Adamitz. But the last two segments, we've gone over the high-profile games for week two of the college football season. Now it's time to jump into week one of the NFL season. Again, we mentioned last night's opener. Despite being a pretty poorly played game, it was entertaining toward the end. You had the Eagles edging out the Falcons again, 18-12. The entire slate is on Sunday, so your full day's worth of action. You know, starting with 10 a.m. starts in the morning games, and you have your 1 p.m. kickoffs and your night games. So let's go through all of them real quick and see what our favorite plays are here. Steelers at Browns. This is interesting. You know, Steelers opened at like six and a half in this one. It's down to four in most spots. The Browns are getting a lot of hype for all those reasons. You have Baker Mayfield in there.
Hard knocks.
The defense looks a lot better. A lot of other playmakers too. Carlos Hyde, Jarvis Landry, and suddenly the expectations are sky high. And you also have the Steelers, the Le'Veon Bell situation, become a distraction. I mean, I think that's, you know, it's another topic to discuss, but I think it's a legit distraction worry, you know, for them, and not to mention an on-field production issue. You know, James Conner might be decent. He's a pretty big drop-off. I mean, I think you could even more or less assign this point spread drop, you know, to Bell, even though it was dropping before it was clear he wasn't going to play. To me, this is, you know, a total pass, but I know some people really like the Browns in this one.
Yeah, I have no bet on this game, Josh. I know that everyone in Ohio will be rooting for the Browns so they can go and bust open those refrigerators and get some Bud Lights.
You guys like this either way?
I mean, I'm kind of leaning Steelers just because, you know, it feels like everybody's on the Browns.
No, I'm big-time Steelers. James Conner is going to show up in this game. And for all the fantasy people that took him in the late rounds to stick it to everybody who draft Le'Veon Bell are going to be thrilled because He's gonna carry the load, and his Steelers are going to cover.
Yeah, let's talk Vikings-Niners. Vikings minus 6.5, total of 46. Another 10 a.m. start. I think this one's interesting because it opened at 5, Vikings minus 5. It's now 6.5. It may be destined to go to that key number of 7. It seems like the steam and the public sentiments on the Vikings. And it's interesting because I thought the Niners were, getting a little overvalued in that futures market, their season win total, set at 9.5, whatever. I thought that was a little optimistic. Having said that, I think they'll do all right. If I get 7 full points, I think I like the Niners. I like Kyle Shanahan's ability to, call plays with that offense. Eager to see Garoppolo and company pick up where they left off last year. That Vikings defense is elite, and they do have playmakers on offense. But, again, to me it's one of those things where you'll be totally fading the public. 7's a lot to get in an NFL game, and I kind of see this coming down to the wire.
Yeah, I'm with you, Josh. I wouldn't do anything except take the points here. You're right about everything you said. People are excited about the Vikings. I know earlier this season I said when Jonathan put me on task that I picked the Vikings to win the Super
right.
Bowl.
Well,
that's right.
Packer fan, man.
No, I understand. I get that. I would take the points here, and that would be the only way I would go.
Yeah, well, I mean, I only look at this game from a teaser standpoint. I took the Vikings to win the game with the Ravens in the same situation. So that's the two-team six-point teaser that I've made. I love the Vikings in this spot to win the game. I'm not interested in laying 6 or 7 with the Vikings because they're typically a low-scoring defensive game, and that 6 points becomes more like 9 or 10. So I'm not interested in that, but I did take the Vikings to win the game.
And Jonathan,
I think if you can get the key number of 7, it's probably some value. I generally steer clear of the Vikings just because I'm biased.
Right.
but the one thing is the total 46 does seem a little high to me. I could see this game, one team definitely being under 20 by the time it's over, and 46 seems a little high.
All right, let's go to the next one because it's interesting. Andrew Luck's much-anticipated return leads the Colts in there, but they're -3 against the Bengals with a total of 48.5, but right now it's actually even money to lay the 3, which shows some books went up from 2.5, so you got to pay -120 to take the points, which I've always said is kind of telling. Whenever there's a juice on one side, the side where you're laying is usually the correct one. I think it's interesting. It's another fade the public spot, though, and that Andrew Luck, who knows how he's going to look after such a long layoff. Having said that, I think the surrounding talent around him isn't going to be that great. The Bengals aren't any great shakes, but +3, that's what I'm taking. I think it's another good public opposition spot.
Yeah, they bet this total up from 46.5 to 48.5, and so I have a bet in my pocket under 24.5 in the first half. Again, Andrew Luck, it's going to be – I want to see what he's going to do before I – back him, certainly. Cincinnati, they always are pretty good defensively. Again, offensively, they're no great shakes, so give me under 24.5 in the first half.
And the Bengals are usually a pretty good dog, so 3 points is a lot in this game, I think. I would only look at the Bengals on this side of it until we learn a little bit more about the Colts have, quite a few problems, and I don't think they're just going to be, clicking on all cylinders to start the year, so we'll see where Luck's at, but I'll take Bengals +3.
Yeah, I'm on Bengals money line. They win outright.
All right. Next one's Ravens -7.5, total of 40.5 against the Buffalo Bills. I gotta say, with all the Bills' quarterback issues, it was just odd. They ended up trading A.J. McCarron, who they ostensibly brought in to be the stopgap guy for Josh Allen. Instead, they're starting Nathan Peterman, who was just disastrous in a handful of starts last year, right? 5 interceptions in his first one against the Chargers. I'd have more faith in the Bills if they threw Josh Allen in there. I think he's better right now. But just a matter of time until we see him. I'm not sure I want to lay the points with the Ravens, but that's, again, talk about teasers and finding a couple six-point teams to put on there. I'd play Baltimore in that regard. Otherwise, not all that interested, but it'd be the only side, but still kind of a pass.
Yeah, when you get Baltimore -7, -7.5, -10, those spots are normally not good. Just check the weather. The heat there right now is incredible, okay? It's over 90. It's like 98 degrees with, of course, 80% humidity. Those teams are going to have trouble this weekend, and I might be looking to play against both of them next week, just depending on how hot it gets. But, again, pass on the game itself.
Oh, advanced handicapping. I like that, Mark.
Always trying to look ahead to get us
I love it.
Correct?
That's the way to do it. The Ravens, one thing I like about them is they actually played the preseason. Like, their games were enjoyable to watch. They actually tried to accomplish some things other than teams
12,
like
13 in a row.
Well, yeah, and preseason. Yep. You look at teams like Atlanta and Philly who didn't play hardly at all in the preseason, and it really showed up last night. I mean, that was ugly to watch, and I think they're a couple weeks behind everybody, those two teams last night. But the Ravens, they're not. I think they're ready to roll, and I think they're in a good spot in this game. I don't love laying 7. Like I said, I took the Ravens on a 2-team 6-point teaser with the Vikings already. But I do actually think the Ravens will cover this. I think they're one of the teams that have a good chance of winning the AFC other than the Patriots, them and the Chargers maybe.
Yeah, I don't know what the Bills are doing. They took a playoff team last year and just totally
went backwards, didn't they?
They just totally wrecked it.
First playoff appearance in 17 years. Let's start over.
Yeah.
Nathan Peterman had 5 interceptions in one half in his NFL career so far. I think the Ravens roll. That defense, if there's a team total on the Bills anywhere under 14, I don't think they get in the end zone twice.
All right, let's go to the next one. You got the Giants. Actually, at home, they're catching 3 points from the Jaguars, so that's Giants +3 against the Jaguars, total of 42.5. This is one where I want to go a little contrarian also because I feel like Jacksonville, for some reason, it's kind of funny. I was late to the party a little bit last year. They were better than I expected, and they came up quickly, went to the AFC title game. And I think the public perception is a little bit wrong on both sides. I think there's this feeling that the Giants, it was kind of an aberration. The receivers are back. They drafted Barkley. They'll be fine. And for some reason, I don't know why, you see widespread belief that Jacksonville is, kind of fluky, and they signed Bortles, so that's just the kiss of death. And that they're really not going anywhere. Having said all that, I think Jacksonville is, I mean, to me, they're the play. I mean, still, all right, -3 is still kind of a lot in an NFL game. They return almost all their starters, which is practically unheard of. They were the hottest team toward the end of the year, a player or two away from being in the Super Bowl. I'm laying the 3. Jonathan?
Giants, to me, are a much improved team. I think they're one of those teams that could possibly be one of those that go from worst to first, because you see it every year in the NFL. I believe in Saquon Barkley is get live up to that number 2 draft pick. And side-wise, I don't know. But I think 42.5 is a little low.
All right,
I think you're going to see some points in that.
Mark Bespy.
Giants at home plus points is always something that I look at. And
it worked like one time last year.
If I see it.
Well, you remember.
Last year, but let's talk over the last 10 years or so.
All right, but you know what I mean. It's current form.
Okay, I like the Cardinals plus points at home, the Bills plus points at home, and the Giants.
All right, Mark Shannon.
Yeah, Josh, you know, you talked about the Jags, and I'll just be real quick. I'm not sold on them. I know a lot of people are. I know you talked about them. Defensively, I think they're super. There's no denying that. I just think that too much too soon. Everyone, you know, they had a great year last year. Now everyone's expecting. Last year they kind of crept up upon some people, and that was only late in the season when they got hot, the last 7 or 8 weeks. So, again, I don't have any money out of my pocket, but I would certainly be on Big Blue at home if I had.
All right. So how about next game here, Saints -9.5, total of 49.5 against the Buccaneers. This is the biggest spread on the board in week one, so everybody who plays those survivor pools straight up or whatever, the Saints would probably be the consensus pick for that. Now, granted, it's going to be a really tough division, the NFC South. All the teams look to be improved, so everyone's kind of down on the Buccaneers. We know Jameis Winston's suspended there, be Fitzpatrick in there. Having said that, I don't know. Like, the Buccaneers tend to jump up and compete when you kind of least expect it. There's a lot of high hopes for the Saints, but I'm not ready to lay those points. Mark Vespi, what would you do?
That's tough. I mean, I look at them a 10-point teaser, just like you know. How do you lay 9.5 with this? You don't know much about. I mean, even Fitzgerald sometimes can rise up. You know, I just think the Saints aren't quite as prolific as they used to be. They run the ball a little more. You know, there's not as many of these quick possessions. So it's tough for them to lay 9.5, I think. I would only have the Buccaneers, but I don't believe in them, so I'm not going to bet that. But I do like the total over a little bit.
All right, Jonathan.
Yeah, you're getting up double digits. It's a little bit tough. I mean, you could definitely tease this. Saints are missing Mark Ingram. Been suspended for the first 4 weeks of the season. Alvin Kamara isn't really like a bell cow back. This one's a pass for me because the number's gotten a little bit too high.
Yeah, this is a pass for me, and only because the Saints in the preseason, we talked about it real quick, they didn't do anything, Josh. I mean, Drew Brees barely played. Literally barely played. And so
didn't take a snap.
Yeah, so now all of a sudden he's going to come out and you're going to lay 10 in this first game. I don't like that at all.
I know, I hate that, Mark, but that's what I'm saying. Like, they just don't play these preseason games at all, and how are you supposed to get any rhythm at all?
Right. All right, let's move on to the next game that actually has quite a disparity of opinions everywhere. That's Patriots -6.5 against the Texans. To me, it seems like the Texans, from what I've heard of, they're sort of the underdog du jour of the first week. Everyone seems to like them. Personally, I don't, but thinking whenever that happens, it's going to be 42-10 New England. I know New England's at a high turnover rate, the receivers and running backs, but they always do. It's hard to peg, but as much as I actually like Deshaun Watson, I like him a lot. I don't like Bill O'Brien, their coach, and most of their weapons. The defense remains to be seen. It was often injured last year, so we'll see if they come back to top quality form. But to me, it's one of those things, especially early on, inside of a touchdown, I'll take the Patriots. But, Mark, since you're considered our resident Patriots expert and can't always let you go first, I will honor that tradition.
Appreciate that, Josh. I think it's tough to lay 6.5 with this game just because there's a lot of unknowns. I mean, the Patriots, you know, everybody says, well, they don't have any receivers. Well, they have receivers. You know, no team has no receivers. They haven't had any receivers for 15 years except Randy Moss. So, you know, they'll figure it out with the tight ends or the running backs or whatever. They do the short passing game. So, they'll get their points, but I mean, it's tough to lay 6.5 right now with this. I would lean Texans, and I think the Patriots, get a win at home, but I wouldn't lay 6.5.
And I believe we have a Texans backer in Jonathan Adamans.
Yeah, I think Texans went out right this week. They haven't been hit with all the injuries that usually hit this team. It's the first game out of the gate. They've had, all offseason to target this game. And to me, if the Patriots weren't in the NFC East, I think they'd, talent-wise, have a hard time making the playoffs in any other division in the AFC. The fact they're in the East and the three other teams in that division are subpar at best, I'm Texans money line.
Mark Shannon.
You make a strong case. I don't have a play on the game. I've just realized the last couple years as I got a little bit older, maybe a little bit smarter, I'm not sure. But I either go with Tom Brady, I very seldom go against him, and I know sometimes that hurts me. But, again, I don't take the Patriots a lot, but I very rarely go against them. Jonathan, I wish you the best of luck with the money line.
All right.
I hope you lose miserably.
So now we have varying opinions on Jonathan's gambling.
So you got Bears money line, so, I take it.
All right, so there's going to be a joy and or despair given that outcome. We're going to head off to our last commercial break. We'll go through the remainder of the Week 1 NFL slate when we return in just a minute here. William Hill Sports Radio Show, ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the last segment of the William Hill Racing Sports Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Before the break, we went through first portion of Sunday's Week 1 NFL slate. Seeing as we're kind of on the home stretch here, we're going to fly through a few of these that none of us have real strong opinions on. One that looks like the Boredom Bowl on Week 1, the Titans against the Dolphins, Titans minus 1.5, total of 45. I mean, to me, that's the ultimate, you know, who cares? Both teams are so hard to predict, and it's, you know, we did a little poll over the break. No one seemed to care about that one, so we're going to move on to Chargers minus 3.5 against the Chiefs, total of 48. I'd normally be on the Chiefs in this spot, but I'm not sure about the Mahomes situation. Again, to me, that's another pass. One game that seemed to generate some interest among our panelists here, Carolina Panthers minus 3 with a total of 42.5. Actually seen some movement here. The total has gone down. It opened 44.5, 45. Panthers have kind of escalated from 2 to it's now a full 3. I actually did some quite a bit of research on Sportsline for this one. Interesting. Both teams, you know, top 5 rushing offense, top 7 defense from last year. Rates to be a grinder as the relatively low total suggests, but I believe Mark Shannon has a strong take on this one.
Yeah, I like the Panthers in this one. And again, we talked about in the preseason, Dallas did absolutely nothing. They never played the entire 4 games. And so last night, looking at what happens, and again, we'll be able to judge by all the teams this weekend. But I certainly like the Panthers. Josh, you talked about it. Like them defensively. And again, I just think they're the better team at home here. Get a chance to get a big win at home in the first week. Give me Carolina. This is money out of my pocket.
And I love the fact that you get the short number, you know, because the Cowboys, they –
America's team.
They tend to give you a couple extra points with the Cowboys, you know. Like, so this should normally be like a 4-point spread to me, I think. So I'll take the Panthers, short number, under a field goal. You got it.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think Carolina's a play.
Cool. See, I've got nothing on that one. But we got Denver Broncos minus 3 against the Seahawks with a total of 42.5. I find this one a little bit interesting because I, like a lot of people, expect the Broncos to be much improved with Case Keenum in there, you know, drafting Bradley Chubb. I think they'll be better all around. But something tells me, especially now that it's a full 3, I'm starting to warm up to the Seahawks a little bit just because, I don't know, I think there's a good chance it falls right on 3. But starting to get some separation, I feel like the Broncos are going to be one of those late kind of public steams. If I can get 3.5, maybe I jump in Seattle at a principal. But I believe Jonathan likes Denver quite a bit.
Yeah, there's such an advantage with the Broncos defensive line versus that Seahawks offensive line. And Doug Baldwin being questionable. Broncos are one of my better plays of the week.
All right, one of the final games on deck here. Cardinals minus 1 against the Redskins with the total of 44. I believe this one opened up as a pick 'em. You're starting to see a little bit of sentiment come in for the Cardinals. I don't know if you guys have any strong opinions on that one, but I'm actually starting to like the Redskins in that one. I think the Cardinals, you know, they were better in the preseason just because they're fighting it out with the quarterbacks, with Rosen and Bradford. Bradford, of course, will probably be out for the year, you know, with a first-half injury. I think the Redskins with Alex Smith, I think they're better.
Yeah, I mean, the Cardinals, you know, they had a plus 17 or something turnover ratio in the preseason, which I know that doesn't really mean much, but what it means to me is that they've got a lot of playmakers on D, and the Redskins are just this mediocre team stuck in the mud over the last few years. I'll take the Cardinals at home just to win the game. I mean, typically I like them as a home dog, and I mean, this is pretty close. It's not exactly the same, but I do like the Cardinals to win this game.
All right, let's talk about the Sunday night game here. Of course, going to draw a lot of interest because you've got the Green Bay Packers minus 7.5 against the Chicago Bears with a total of 47.5. This actually went down. It opened up actually 8.5, 9. A lot of reasons for, you know, some recent steam on the Bears. Of course, the acquisition of Khalil Mack and a recent trade with the Oakland Raiders. They drafted Roquan Smith, and they looked pretty decent in the preseason with a new coach, Matt Nagy, coming over from the Kansas City Chiefs. So it's going to be about, you know, it's a flat 7, you know, by kickoff time. I anticipate, you know, the whole public will be on, you know, Green Bay. Not sure. I'm actually warming up to the Bears, you know, a little bit as an underdog, though I'd like to get more points. But I think we have our Green Bay expert on hand, and Jonathan.
Well, yeah, obviously I'm a Packers fan. I typically don't bet the games just because I am biased, just like I stay away from Vikings games because
it's
I'm biased.
It's actually good to admit that, by the way, because some people, it's like their thing. They can't, you know, they're blinded by their passion.
Yeah.
They bet their team every game. It's better to stay away.
But Aaron Rodgers, man, national television, first game back. I can't see him not performing well in this game. Khalil Mack is, I think, the only reason this line's moved as much as it has. I think by kickoff it'll probably be an even seven, but, yeah, of course I'm going to pick Green Bay.
And Mark Shannon.
Yeah, well, I took the Bears before the Mack trade, okay? Now, like you said, I'm sure that's most the reason that people are coming on to them. Love the new addition of the new head coach. Like what he's done. Of course, I think Mitch Trubisky's going to be better in his second year. I like the whole program, the Bears. You know, John Fox, God bless him, he's been around a long, long time, and I just think the Bears have some talent there. I think they've gotten better. Again, the Khalil Mack, I get that everyone's excited about that, but I was on the Bears before that. Jonathan, to your point, again, I will lose this game by seven and walk out and be happy. So,
Mark Vespi.
Yeah, well, the thing is, the Bears seem to be everybody's kind of, you know, pick to, like, make some strides. You know, like, a lot of people have thought the Buccaneers were going to do it over the last couple of years, but that never came to fruition. So we'll see if the Bears do that. I think they have a lot of good things in place. I would only have the Bears here.
All right. Let's talk about the Monday night doubleheader. Every year the NFL does this. Just make sure everyone gets their full dose of football on the first weekend to do a doubleheader starting early Monday night. So you have a game actually starting at 4:15. It's the Lions hosting the Jets. The Lions are -6.5, total of 45. You know, the storylines, of course, coming in here. Matt Patricia is the new head coach of the Lions, former Patriots defensive coordinator. Of course, the storyline for the Jets is they decided to start Sam Darnold after acquiring Bridgewater, then trading him off to the Saints late in the process, taking Josh McCown, who's been pretty solid for them the last couple of years, and just decided to go with the guy that all the hype is behind. And one thing I'm curious about is normally I wouldn't want to lay this many points with the Lions at all. They added to their running game. They should be better. They were pretty weak on defense last year. But Mark Vespi, I know at least you were in – like-minded with me and Sam Darnold last year, the last couple of years at USC being vastly overrated. I still feel that same. They're throwing him in there, literally no pun intended, to the Lions. Normally I'd probably pass, but with Darnold in there, I'm laying those points.
You're going to lay 6.5 with the Lions?
Against Sam Darnold, okay. With how many pick sixes is...
Good luck with that. I hate the Jets, but 6.5 with the Lions?
I will.
Okay, good luck to
Did
you.
Did you not agree with me over the past 3 years on Sam Darnold?
I do, but I mean... The Lions shouldn't lay a field goal to anybody. You know what I mean? I'd take the Jets.
All right, Jonathan.
I'm on the Lions. I'm the same way. I think they have improved the running game. They may very well be behind at halftime and then come back and win that thing by a touchdown.
Mark Shannon.
I have under in this game, and I'm interested to see how Matt Patricia performs as a head coach. During the preseason, again, you know, the Lions didn't show too much. They just kind of went through things. I wish someone other than Sam Darnold was in the backfield taking the snaps, but I think because of that, they're going to keep things simple, stupid, and I hope that helps me towards my under here in this game.
All right, not bad. So the final game of week one, your second late doubleheader on Monday night with a 7:30 kickoff is the Oakland Raiders in the new John Gruden regime. His first real game coming back as head coach against the Rams, who many people expect to be a contender to, you know, come out of the NFC for the Super Bowl. Started off -2.5. We're up to -4 now. Of course, the spread's grown amid the Mack trade and the general consensus that the Raiders didn't look too good in the preseason. I'm curious to see how this looks, you know, when the lights go on. But it's another public team. I mean, I get it, you know, on the Rams. They look pretty good. You know, the Raiders were pretty poor on defense, you know, without Khalil Mack. I mean, they could be in a little trouble here. But I know as kickoff approaches and the spread grows, believe me, if I get 4.5 or more, I feel like I'd be fading the public by taking the 4.5 with the Raiders. You know that Monday night black hole crowd is going to be insane with Gruden's real return. This is the real deal. I'm starting to wonder if I can get, you know, behind that public steam and go the opposite way, get a good deal on the Raiders. I'm thinking about it. We'll see how the spread moves. Mark Vespi.
I think there's good value in the Raiders in this game just because of the energy in the building, the fact that the Rams didn't play the preseason at all. You know, it's just another one of those teams. I think it's going to be tough for them to just come out and, you know, just make it happen right away. So I'll take the points. Raiders at home on the Monday night. You know, Gruden's return. I think they'll be – that place will be crazy. I've been to 100 Raider games. This is a perfect Raider game where it's just going to be insane. So I don't know how that translates. Definitely Raiders maybe first half. I don't know. I like the Raiders side of it.
Mark Shannon.
I will take the points and then give me half of another bet on the money line with the Raiders.
Jonathan.
Rams big. Bet it now before the line moves up.
All right. And you could, yeah, for weeks now, you could add, you know, 2.5 or 3 also. So those are our thoughts on week one of the NFL action. Again, get in action with William Hill for all your contests. They have, again, Pro Pick'em, Weekly Jackpot, Progressives, the college contest. Get down here and sign up for those contests because it's pretty much your last day. The college contest kicks off tomorrow, Pro Pick'em on Sunday, and you need to get in on those, although you have a shot each week for the Progressive cards. We're spending our last couple minutes here with, I'm sure, what many of our listeners are long-awaited UFC 228 analysis. Check it out tomorrow night. Big welterweight fight between champion Tyron Woodley and the challenger from Australia, Darren Till. Pretty interesting, Jonathan Adamitz. I know that you and I are on opposite sides of this one, but also the spread is flipped, which I just think is wild. Woodley was minus 140 to start. People wonder, Till always misses weight. What's going to happen with that? He got in there, made the weight today, and suddenly the thing is flipped on its head to where Till's, you know, the minus whatever, 135 last I checked. Woodley coming in at plus 115. And we don't have time to get into the grander scheme of things, but I know Woodley feels underappreciated as a champion. I believe he is. As an underdog here, I've got him all day, but you're on the other side of this
one. Yeah, the value has definitely gone on Till. I mean, like I said last week, I had to see him make weight before I walked to the window, and apparently everybody was thinking the same thing. He actually came in at 169, a full pound under what he needed to, I think, to prove a point. To me, this guy's focused. Seems to be his time. Nothing personal against Woodley. I think he's a great fighter. But he's been on the shelf, hasn't fought in a year. He had surgery on his power right hand in the shoulder. To me, it's just Till's time.
All right.
I lost the value on it because I waited too long. I should have bet it when he was a dog, but I'm still gonna be on Till.
And we'll see. And as you mentioned, a lot of people thought, you know, it was Woodley's time when he beat Robbie Lawler. He's been there a little while. We'll see. I just think by and large, you know, they talk about hype trains or whatnot. I'm not sure. Till has faced the highest level competition. I think Woodley comes out on top. But it's worthwhile if you check out that UFC fight. Should be a high-level welterweight championship. That wraps us up for this week of the William Hill Racing Sports Show. Appreciate you being with us. Again, make sure you download the app if you haven't already. You know, get in on your contest. And we will see you here same time next week. Again, for Josh Nagel, this is Mark Shannon, Mark Vespi, Jonathan Adamitz. We'll see you next week, ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.